worried that the same trend would emerge this time. Instead, much of the rest of the economy is healing, if slowly and fitfully. Factories, whilst not fully recovered, are cranking out goods and have added jobs, even every month since May. Home sales have soared 26% from a year ago, fueled by affluent people able to work from home while looking for more space. That trend has in turn bolstered higher-paying jobs in banking, in insurance and real estate. Brad Hirschbein, an economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, and Harry Holzer, an economist at Georgetown University, concluded in a new research paper titled "Such Differences in Employment Loss Between the Highest and Lowest Wage Workers Are Almost Certainly Unprecedented Among U.S. Recessions Over the Past 100 Plus Years." On the surface, the December jobs report the government issued on Friday, 10th of January, was absolutely dismal. The economy lost 140,000 jobs. It was a sixth straight month in which the hiring has slumped from the previous month. Unemployment remained stubbornly high at 6.7%. But the negative numbers stemmed entirely from the brutal loss, nearly 500,000 jobs lost, in a category that includes restaurants, hotels, and entertainment. State and local government also cut workers. So did hair salons and other personal services. There were layoffs too in education. Nearly every other industry added jobs. Construction gained 51,000 jobs, financial services 12,000 jobs. Transportation and warehousing companies, beneficiaries of a surge in e-commerce and delivery services amid the pandemic, gained nearly 47,000 jobs. Hirschbein said in an interview, "Job losses have definitely been very heavily concentrated in certain industries, much more so than prior recessions. Once the coronavirus vaccine becomes distributed more widely and the latest government aid packages is pumped into the economy, more analysts expect a solid recovery to kick in this summer. The incoming Biden administration, along with a now fully Democratic-led House and Senate, will also likely push additional rescue aid and spending measures that, as they claimed, could accelerate economic growth. Economists note that the $2 trillion aid package the government enacted in March, which included generous unemployment benefits and aid to small companies and businesses, did more to prevent layoffs from spending than many analysts had expected. But a big unknown overhangs the 2021 economy. Will the economic recovery come fast enough and be robust enough to absorb many of the Americans who lost their jobs in the hospitality industries into more resilient sectors of the job market? For now, the resurgent pandemic has made consumers reluctant to shop, travel, dine out, and congregate in crowds, and led states and cities to reimpose stricter limits on restaurants. The trend has upended the lives of people like Brad Pierce of West Warwick, Rhode Island, in New York. Brad Pierce had gradually built up a career as a stand-up comedian, only to see it derailed by the pandemic and restrictions on the places that he performed. Now he wonders if that life will ever return. Even when the centres where Brad Pierce worked had reopened, they couldn't offer live entertainment because of coronavirus restrictions. He fears some of these venues won't survive. Brad Pierce receives about $500 a week in unemployment aid, and his wife still works as a healthcare technician, busier than ever because she administers COVID-19 tests. Though he feels fortunate financially, the contrast sometimes depresses him. Brad Pierce, a 40-year-old, said, "She's working all the time whilst I can't work, and it's a terrible feeling as a husband and a spouse." In the meantime, there have been odd gigs for him here and there. The weirdest was a stand-up routine he did via Zoom for a company's holiday party. He asked the employees to unmute so he could hear them laughing, only to be hit by a cacophony of dogs barking, kids yelling, and television sets blaring. He spent the rest of the gig watching his audience silently, moving lips to see if they might be laughing. Brad Pearce said, "I have days where I think I will come back, and days where I think, well, I guess I'll never work again." Hirschbein and Holzer's research found that job losses have been deeper among blacks and Hispanic workers than among whites, and also more pronounced for those in lower-paying jobs. Hirschbein found employment amongst the lowest-paid one-quarter Americans has sunk nearly 12% since February of this year. Among the highest-paid quarter, it's declined less than 3.5%. Hirschbein said the proportion of white Americans with jobs has fallen 6% since the pandemic. Among black and Hispanic Americans, it's down 10%. This means that at some portion of the pandemic, job losses become permanent. Non-white workers will be hurt the most. Michelle Holder, an economist at John Jay College, noted that the two biggest sources of job losses amongst black women have been cashiers at stores and restaurants, including fast food outlets and in childcare. She said she fears that many of those jobs likely won't return, even as the pandemic fades away, as some shifts in the economy become permanent. Business travel won't likely return to its previous levels as more meetings are conducted remotely. Many healthcare appointments are now held online, thereby reducing the need for some staffers in doctors' offices. That may end a decades-long narrowing of the black-white unemployment gap, given that many lower-paid jobs are disproportionately held by black workers. Michelle Holder said, "There are significant changes coming in terms of where we work, what jobs will be available," she added. "All this will hit women, low-wage workers and people of color." As the pandemic recession rages on, more small businesses have been forced to close. This trend threatens to become a long-term drag on the job market because new companies will have to be created to absorb many laid-off workers. David Gilbertson, vice president at UKG, a company that makes employee time management software, said, "Among his firm's clients with fewer than 100 employees in March, 13% have now closed, more than double the figure in a typical year." Another round of small business loans included in the $900 billion aid package approved last month will be crucial to help prevent another wave of closings. David Gilbertson said, "They've made it this far and now they're on the brink of having to close down." In the meantime, the struggling jobless include people who have forged independent careers, people like Brian Blue, who quit his job as an equipment repairman in Kansas City a year ago to become a full-time musician in Las Vegas, Nevada. Before the pandemic, Blue typically played bass guitar in bands at venues several nights a week. He is unsure that Vegas music scene will ever return to what it was. Blue, who hasn't played a gig since March, is now wrestling with whether to give up hope of rebuilding his music career. For now, he's working as a delivery driver for a sandwich shop, earning $9 an hour before tips. He receives unemployment benefit depending on how much he earns with his job in a given week. Blue, a 46-year-old, said, "Time will tell, I guess. It's been a difficult pill to swallow."
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum. Dear listeners, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station Choo Choo Kachoo. It's the Youth Station for you. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us
Mehdi Najafi.
That's right. You're not from Najaf, though, are you?
Well, I've been there, yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah, I've been there.
Well, there's a word in Arabic, and I can't find the English equivalent for it. I've tried really hard, and it's very difficult, as is the case with so many Arabic words.
Yeah.
So the word is haya.
Al-haya.
Yeah.
As you said, you haven't been able to find a word in English that translates inaccurate. Yeah. You won't.
Yeah. You're not going to. But, I mean, can we try?
Yeah, sure. But, like, you won't find a single word. You know why? Because haya, even in Arabic, does not have a single meaning.
I just want to clarify. We're talking about shame, right? We're talking about modesty. We're talking about the idea that you want to clothe yourself. Haya after committing sin. So there's and then this will bring the translation from modesty to shame. Right, it's the idea of shame.
There's no haya after committing sin. There's nadam. Generally, right? We want a general definition of haya.
Right.
The general definition of haya is this. That haya is a feature which stops the person having that feature from committing actions that are not suitable in terms of worship of the Lord.
Okay, that's so now there's another interesting thing. Point here. I'm just going to say something, and if it's wrong, or you know, if you have, like, correct me. But it's not something you can learn, because we're talking about children for a moment and youths. Can we teach youths to have haya? I'd like to argue that you can't. It's just something that you have or you don't. There's a hadith that teaches us that one who has no haya has no iman. Right.
Yeah.
Isn't it something which is just there, or it's not there? And of course, the more somebody's iman increases, the more their haya will increase.
What you said, that the person who has no haya has no iman, that indirectly also means the same thing that you said later, right now, that the higher your iman, the haya goes higher. Because when you said there's no...
The same as ghira. Ghira, right? Your ghira, your chivalry, your manly kind of chivalry, your that feeling, it goes up as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but
your,
like, that's...
Your feeling of possessiveness or whatever, however you want to define that. I mean, that's a whole subject in and of itself. But, man, that you can't... And the reason I'm saying this is because, like, in the West, I remember in school, you know, the kids would do nasty things. They were all non-Muslim, you know, average, you know, UK kids. They would do really nasty things. And
you're right.
I remember thinking, because I was naughty myself, right? But I remember thinking, wow, I can't do that. That's nasty.
Yeah, but you might in your life experience certain points that, for example, right now, go back that stage that we were a kid. You might not have done the same things that those kids had done. But right now, there might be certain things that when you look back, you're like, oh my God, that's embarrassing. How could I have done that?
Of course,
right?
Many things, yeah.
See, back then you had a certain limit of haya. Mm. So I have no idea, and I really want to research about this. This question is very beautiful that you ask. Is it something that you can learn, or is it something that is there? I think I can conclude that it is there. It's something within the fitrah, which is the what?
The divine innate nature.
The divine innate nature is there, more or less.
Right.
That's something that I think, can understand from
now,
that.
There is a beautiful hadith I have to say here. Imam Kadhim alayhi salam, he says, be modest or have haya with Allah when in private, just as you are modest with people in public.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy. So, you know,
that eliminates hypocrisy from the core.
Well, that's scary, isn't it? Because, the Imam, alayhi salam, is teaching us that, look, the way you and we have hadith to this effect, that the way you behave
in... hadith is loading up in my mind.
Right, the way you behave in private, that is who you are.
Can I continue the hadith? Not this hadith, but this another hadith that sounds like this is a continuity of this hadith.
Go on then.
It says, اتقوا معاصي الله في الخلوات.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
SubhanAllah. Translation.
It says, be afraid or like...
Yeah, have taqwa. Conscious.
Be conscious of... not committing sins of when you're alone, right? فَإِنَّ الشَّاهِدَ هُوَ الْقَاضِي.
Whoa.
That's mind-blowing. For example, you're in a court.
Translation.
Right, I'm going to go with the scenario. I'm going to build this up, and then I'm going to tell, then translate.
For example,
you're in a court, right?
Yeah.
And that might not be the case in the modern courts, but imagine you're in a court, right?
Yeah.
And you've committed a crime, right? And there's a judge right there. For example, he's a Supreme Court judge and there is no judicial authority above him.
Okay.
Right? He's there. And you go up to him and you're like, Your Honor, I haven't committed this sin.
Right.
Right? And he, for example, if he says it, you might be like, oh, you're lying. For example, he pulls up his phone, his personal phone, is like, look, this is my phone. I was standing there and I filmed this. I saw you do that.
Whoa.
For example.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the translation is, اتقوا معاصي الله في الخلوات. Be conscious of committing sins when you're by yourself. فإن الشاهد because the witness, هو القاضي, is the judge.
هو القاضي.
So who?
That's terrifying.
That sounds like this.
This discussion has actually taken us to a place of valuing solitude and realizing how great solitude actually is. Because when you're on your own, you're not really on your own.
You're never on your own.
SubhanAllah. I mean, we treat people as though they are judges. But Allah is the only judge, really.
Yeah, but like, that also changes everything for you, for how you react in society, how you live in society.
The next kind of realm that we want to dive into in this regard is to do with mass media and how mass media is actually eaten away at the haya of the masses.
You are right. See, if you have that consciousness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when you're by yourself in solitude, it changes the way you treat other people, let alone how you respect yourself or how you... have got this grace within you, it changes the way you treat other people. For example, if there's a person who likes to be among rulers, for example, wealthy people, right? Mm. And those wealthy people, they do not treat those who are poor or less fortunate the way they're supposed to treat them.
Mm.
This person, because he likes to be with them, right? He does the same thing, right? He humiliates those people because he wants to get closer to those people, right? But once he's got this consciousness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he treats those people and the other people the same way, right? Be them affluent or poor, whatever. So it changes the way you see other people, the way you treat them also, right? Is it making sense in terms of social media? Because social media is practically, well, not practically, but in a sense, you walking out in the world, right?
Right. It's actually opened up a door for people to be shameless out there. There's things that people do on social media they would never do in public.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
you're
think
right.
about all yeah, the yeah, duck yeah, faces. Yeah. Would you do that in front of a bunch of guys?
What? You wouldn't. Duck face?
A duck face, you know, yeah. they're all posing with like lots of makeup and you know, they're in certain poses, making certain faces.
You know what?
I'm talking about the like more, you know.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. That makes me think that social media has opened the door, as you said, and gradually from there is returning to the real life.
Absolutely. Okay, look, if you can post a picture of yourself online, you've already lost a little bit of your payout, right? And then it goes on and on and on from there, doesn't it?
And then the social media or no social media, you're the same person now. You've developed this shamelessness.
Right. So it's interesting because I've noticed that there are certain people online who don't have DPs. They don't have their own picture as their display picture.
Men?
Men and women.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I'm just telling you an observation here. So I used to have my picture as my display picture, and I just thought, okay, that's normal and, you know, whatever. I didn't realize how much it was affecting my behavior and the way I perceive things and the effect it has on your psychology until I talked to a teacher and he said, no, don't put your picture up. He was saying it he gave other reasons, but the point is when I stopped doing it, I kind of felt like I joined a different club. Am I completely throwing you off right now?
No, I'm really interested. I want to know where this goes.
So if you look at I want to say the best of us, the best people in our community, the best people, the most bahaya, like with haya people, none of them have even and I'm talking about men and women, they just don't show their faces online in terms of display pictures. I mean, obviously, it's different if you're doing something intentional for the soft war and things like that, but just commonly, they usually have a picture of, somebody who they revere, like Imam Khomeini or Imam Khamenei or, I don't know, anybody, or some sort of painting or anything.
I have no... when it comes to ladies, women... I do understand, but men, I have lost you, man. I don't know what you mean.
Okay, well, for women, it makes much more sense, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that too. Like, it's better if a woman doesn't show her face. Okay, right. And that makes sense. Okay.
Right.
But it's men as well. And it might not be because of haya. It might be because of something else.
You said you've done that, right? You must have felt something that you've done after you did it, right?
Yeah.
Because I want to know. I've got no
social
idea.
Social media,
man,
does this thing to you where...
What do you mean by social media? Sorry, go on.
Any social media platform. For Facebook example, or Twitter or...
WhatsApp. Just WhatsApp.
Even WhatsApp. WhatsApp.
Oh, okay. So that's what you're talking about. Instagram, I think I can relate. Oh, sorry. I don't mean relate in the sense I can comprehend what you're trying to say or what you're saying.
But even when I was on Facebook, even when I was on Twitter, whenever I would put my own display picture up, it makes you think about yourself so much. And I'll just say it from my perspective, right? How do I want to present myself? Should I be professional? Should I be smiling? Should I not be smiling? How will people see this? How will they think about me? What will they think? Inevitably, you're going to think about that. And then even if you put a picture up of yourself, like, you know, just, you know, without thinking about it, it's still going to affect your psychology because you're actually saying, oh, I don't care what people think. But by saying that you don't care what
people
think...
You literally...
You do. Yeah. Right? So that's what I'm saying. It affects your psychology in so many different ways.
Yeah, I think
I do feel like haya does have a role to play in it.
I don't know. For example, like...
Because now, whenever I see people with display pictures, the types of display pictures that I would have done like years back, I just feel kind of sorry for them because you feel like you are a little bit, there is an element of shamelessness there. it sounds crazy,
man. I don't think about for men. I don't know, man. For example, there's this person who's standing there.
You're saying that because your display picture's up, aren't you?
I don't know. I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure. Let me check.
I've forgotten as well.
Yeah. So what was I saying? I was saying, for example, there's a person, he's got a photo of himself, the holy shrine in Karbala or in Najaf or anywhere where people go for pilgrimage, for ziyarah. He's got a photo over in that place, and they upload that photo.
I've seen that, yeah.
For example, that. I cannot relate shamelessness or lack of haya over there or... I don't know, man. I've lost myself over here. I think I've lost you and myself.
Okay, look, I just want to discuss this because this is one of my pet peeves. This is something that irritates me when people do that.
Right.
But I just want to say I can see the benefits to it as well. I can see why it's a good thing and it promotes
certainly,
the haram and stuff
certainly,
like that.
Certainly does.
So yeah. I do know that it has its good sides, but at the same time, it's the haram. It's the haram of Ahlul Bayt. That's where the holy, the blessed body is lying at rest, and you're taking a selfie, like, grinning in front of it.
No, it's not necessary that the person is grinning.
Isn't there a level of in that act?
I don't know. Look, the person's own mentality is very, very crucial over here. For example, this person literally thinks that, or you know, like, we hear that, but we do not believe it, or at least myself, like, I can't say I believe it because I do have a faith in it. For example, these places are heaven on earth, right? These places are heaven on earth. I say I believe it, but I'm not sure if I do believe it. If I did believe it, I would be there. But this person actually believes that, and he's there, and he is hysteric.
And he's thinking about all the people that are going to like his picture.
Not necessary.
I don't want it. That's what I'm just questioning here, right?
Yeah, that's
if you, if you
that's
went to
possible.
Heaven, if you went
you
to
remember
heaven,
when I said, yeah. when did I said, is it Instagram yeah. or is it WhatsApp? That's where I do see a difference because Instagram is right. complete show off of your life, man.
Right.
You know,
right.
your stories of the restaurant you went to, the food you ate, the new clothes you bought, all that stuff. You're right about that. That's just completely showing off.
We're out of time completely. That's all we have time for. Inshallah, we'll see you next time. From myself and from Brother Mahdi, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
My love, my life, my days, my nights, my wealth, my prayers are for you. Now I know how it's like to have your precious love in my life. Now I know. I wish that everybody knew how amazing it feels to love you. I wish that everyone could see how your love has set me free. Set me free and made me strong.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and here are some factors to contemplate upon regarding the all-glorious Creator, whom imagination cannot encompass, as described by Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who is one without partner. He who cannot be perceived with vision, neither be described with tongues, nor can imagination surround his state.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
French citizens fear that France is becoming a police state. They believe that the regime in Paris wants to limit their freedoms. France has been the scene of social violence recently. People in France are protesting against a draft controversial security law. The legislation, known as the Global Security Bill, restricts filming on duty police officers. Article 24 of the proposed bill makes it a criminal offence to publish images of on-duty police officers with the intent to harm their physical or psychological integrity. It says offenders could face up to a year in prison and be fined €45,000. Protesters describe the bill as France's way of curbing freedoms while preaching their importance to others. According to France's police watchdog, the IPGN, there were almost 1,500 complaints against officers last year, half of them for alleged violence. The timing of this bill couldn't be worse. It was voted right after a video was circulating online of the brutal arrest of a black music producer for not wearing a mask. The United Nations Human Rights Chief also urged France to withdraw a controversial part of its global security bill that would curb the freedom to share images identifying police. There's much truth to this statement. In France, it seems that racism and hatred against minorities and people of color is historic. France was a colonialist empire. The first colonial empire in France began in 1534, and the second colonial empire began in 1830. For example, Bordeaux was France's second largest slave port and prospered off the lucrative trade, deporting 150,000 African slaves to the Americans from 1672 to 1837 and providing Europe with goods such as cocoa, sugar and cotton. These historic realities are not mentioned on the banners. The new sign for the statue of slave trader David Gradis, who lived from 1665 to 1751 in the French city of Bordeaux, explains that he had 10 slave ships and provided a plot of land that became the city's first Jewish cemetery. It says nothing about his slave deals with American settlers. Another controversial statue is that of deceased colonizer Louis Faidherbe in the northern city of Lille, France. In the decades following the French Revolution and Napoleon's final defeat at Waterloo back in 1815, a new movement called Romanticism began to flourish in France. France, through many liberal and social movements, tried to paint a different picture of its past. But even the French president recently emphasized that France is the same as it always was and won't change its past. But racism is not the only problem in France. Recently, there has been a spike of Islamophobia there. After the controversial law on global security and the massive protest against it, the French government has approved another controversial bill, this time called Law on Separatism, provoking another round of popular protests against it too. France guarantees the freedom of religion by virtue of the 1789 Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen. The Republic is based on the principle of laicity, that is, of freedom of religion enforced by Jules Ferry laws and the 1905 Law on the Separation of the State and the Church. Paris has traditionally been associated with alternative artistic or intellectual subcultures, many of which involved foreigners. But it seems that things have changed in France, especially with the rise of Muslim immigrants there and across Europe. France's Prime Minister Castex openly said that this bill targets what he called radical Islam, enemy of the Republic. Paris has promoted the bill to target separatists undermining the nation and Muslims. The bill comes after outrage in the aftermath of a measure by French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, which reprinted offensive caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in October of 2020. Charlie Hebdo's measure drew strong criticism from Muslims in France and Muslim countries, who called it an Islamophobic act, despite which French President Emmanuel Macron refused to condemn the measure, citing freedom of expression and claiming that it was not right for a political leader to get involved in editorial matters. The cartoons were originally published by the Danish newspaper Jyllands-Posten in 2005 and then republished by Charlie Hebdo in 2006. Human rights groups have raised concerns over the law, saying it would discriminate and stigmatize French Muslims. The bill in question requires that everyone strictly respects the French Republican principles of secularism, whatever that might mean. The funding of Muslim associations and mosques will be closely monitored. The main association in defense of Muslims, the CCIF, was dissolved. All organizations will have to sign a declaration on secularism if they want to receive funds from the state. In case of non-compliance, they would have to refund the money. In 1990, riots are triggered after two North Africans are shot dead. Also that same year, thousands of people commemorate killing of 17-year-old Moroccan in a racist incident. In 1991, police clash with French Arabs and North Africans. In 1992, tens of thousands of protesters take to the streets to demand change against racism. In 1993, the government approves a draft law to reinstate key provisions of its immigration law declared unconstitutional a month earlier. In 1997, thousands of protesters demonstrated across France against proposed legislation that would further tighten immigration controls. Minorities in France, whether people of color or Muslims, believe that the situation nowadays has got even worse. With the rise of police brutality against blacks and the rise in Islamophobia, supported directly by the state, they're going to have to live with new realities in a nation that has long preached human rights values and democracy while covering up its controversial racist and colonialist past.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
وفي الإسلام دينا. رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام دينا.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. So welcome to this program. Today's special. We're going to speak about the struggle against the self, or Jihadun Nafs. So I invite you to be with today's special.
You, I felt that God answered my call. There was that one place I always thought about, and I just wanted to be there with you. The place that no eye has ever seen, the place that no heart has ever perceived. I had a great feeling inside of me that one day I'd be there with you. And now that we're here, feeling so good.
Today, Tuesday, is the 28th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 23rd of Day, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 12th of January, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. For the opening, we choose chapter Nazi'at from the Holy Quran and verses 37 to 41. Let's listen to it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Fa'amma man tagha.
So as for he who transgressed.
Wa'athara al-hayata ad-dunya.
And preferred the life of the world.
فَإِنَّ الْجَحِيمَ هِيَ الْمَأْوَى.
Then indeed hellfire will be his refuge.
وَأَمَّا مَنْ خَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّهِ وَنَهَى النَّفْسَ عَنِ الْهَوَى.
But as for he who feared the position of his Lord and prevented the soul from unlawful inclination.
فَإِنَّ الْجَنَّةَ هِيَ الْمَأْوَى.
Then indeed paradise will be his refuge.
لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ. لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
مَا لَنَا رَبٌ سِوَى.
In the verses, people are categorized in only two groups: the worldly rebels and the pious who fear Allah. The permanent abode of the first group is hell, and the eternal site of the second group is heaven. Of course, there is here a third group who are not mentioned in these verses. They are those guilty believers of minor sins through human frailty who had pretended and been forgiven. And if they deserve it, will join the blessed, and if not, will enter hell. But they will not be there forever.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. I wish that somehow you tell me out aloud that on that day I'll be okay. But we'll never know, that's not the way it was. Help me find my way.
What is the struggle against the self? Dear brothers and sisters, we must know while confronting self that compromise and peace settlement is not possible, and what is required is a devastating blow making him cripple permanently from plotting any further conspiracies. In order to achieve happiness and salvation, there is no other alternative except to follow this course. And because of this reason, a struggle against the self has been called in traditions as greater struggle or Jihadul Akbar. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, said, "By means of fighting against the self, incite him towards Allah's worshipping. Fight him the way one must fight with his worst enemy, and dominate over him like the domination of the victor over his opponent. The most powerful person is the one who is victorious over himself." Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa binasta'in. In this episode, we are going to talk about jihad against our carnal desires. In contrast to awareness, there's the stage or the state of being unaware or unawareness. And unawareness is one of the main vices and main causes for going astray, not only in this way, but not only in this world, but also in the world hereafter. Now we find that in this connection, we find that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam indicated that whoever awakens one's own heart will be rewarded both in this world and in the hereafter. And whoever awakens one's own heart and prevents one's soul from following the carnal desires of lusts and lustful life, their name will be recorded in the record of those people who've been always aware and who've been always watchful of the end point. According to some great mystics, the practice of training oneself to do good and not following the carnal desires should be implemented, should be made inherent by practice. In the beginning, it may be rather difficult. However, practice makes perfect.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I, when I have you, to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't
Piety, the most important factor for purification. In Islamic schools, piety has been assigned the most important position, and the pious believers are regarded as the most distinguished and respectable persons in an Islamic society. The phrase piety in the Quranic verses and narrations, and especially in the glorious book of Nahjul Balagha, the Path of Eloquence, has been repeated quite frequently. The Holy Quran considers piety as the sole criteria for appraising the value and worth of individuals, and said in chapter 49, verse 13, Lo, the noblest of you is the sight of Allah Almighty is the best in conduct. In Nahjul Balagha and other books of tradition, piety has been assigned the most distinguished position in all ethical matters. Imam Ali alayhis salam has said, piety acquires the most prominent position in all ethical affairs.
Every time I close my eyes, I see in front of me. I still can hear your voice calling out my name. And I remember all the stories you told me. I miss the time you were around. I miss the time you were around. But I'm so grateful for every moment I spent with you. 'Cause I know life won't last forever.
We reach to the stage that we introduce you the steps of a struggle against the self, self-conditioning. The resolve and self-evaluation from the previous steps should form themselves into specific commitments to self-conditioning. For example, one who has an evil habit of lustful eyes, backbiting tongue, or inflated ego should say to himself, I will not violate the law of Allah today, and consciously avoid such habits for one day. By performing such an experiment with sincerity and resolve, he will realize how easy this task is. He should ignore Satan and the evil ideas that will magnify this small task as being difficult or even impossible. Thus, gradually, he can extend this period by experiment and see how easy it is to get rid of an evil habit or to acquire a position merit.
Just like an intoxicant. When you drink alcohol, alcohol consumes your mind and it impairs your judgment. That's why you can't drive when you're under the influence. You'll get a DUI. The nafs has the same sort of effect over the mind. If the nafs takes over the mind, it impairs its judgment. The mind can't think straight. In another saying, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Aduul Aql al Hawa, the greatest enemy of the mind is the nafs and its desires. It's the greatest enemy. What kills the mind is the nafs. The Quran states that the best road to paradise and the road to happiness and the road to stability in your life, bringing joy and pleasure in your life, is by controlling your nafs. Putting that nafs on a leash and not allowing the nafs to put you on a leash. There's some people that control their nafs and others, their nafs controls them. The Quran says, you put your nafs under control and you will reach paradise. وَأَمَّا مَنْ خَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّهِ وَنَهَى النَّفْسَ عَنِ الْهَوَى فَإِنَّ الْجَنَّةَ هِيَ الْمَأْوَى. He who fears Allah and restraints his nafs, he shall be in paradise. That's the road to paradise. He who restrains his nafs.
I think this topic we talked about is so interesting. There was the struggle against the self or jihad on nafs. So we continue, inshallah, on the next episode of today's special. Till then, tomorrow, have a nice time. Fi amanillah.
Look around yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue. Planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun. Such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves. Isn't this proof enough for us?
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.